Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sun International 2020 Interim Results Conference. Please note that this presentation has been made available for download on the Sun International website. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Anthony Leeming. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I hope you're all well and safe. I'm gonna go through the presentation. I will try to go through reasonably quickly because most of the information I think is probably known, and we have spoken to a lot of you over the last couple of months, and we had the investor call just before the rights issue to update everyone. A lot of the information I think might be quite well known. I'm gonna start on page four, which is really key lowlights. Let's not call them highlights, but it's quite obvious when we closed for a period of 3 months, March was severely impacted by the announcement of the potential lockdown and the state of emergency. March, from our perspective, was largely a write-off when you looked down to the EBITDA line and with operations starting to close. When you look at operating loss, you know, we're a large capital invested business with big assets, and they have high depreciation charge. If you've got no top line, you're gonna have a big bottom line loss. I don't think there's anything really to focus on there, and I think the priority is really looking forward. If I move to slide six, you know, we'll quickly touch on the past, but, you know, we came out of a period of continuous margin improvement over the past few years. We all know we've been speaking a lot about efficiencies, back to basics, and various things. The more you dig, the more you find, and I think certainly COVID, as I'll talk to you, has helped us find others. We reduced some tax leakage, and started recognizing tax losses and raised a deferred tax asset. This was always important in terms of cash flow management, really getting the balance sheet right and where we had issues addressing them. Our liquidity position has significantly improved. I think the cash generation, we got down to 2.8 debt to EBITDA. We had spent 600 million on Sibaya. You know, factoring all that in South Africa, we were down to very comfortable levels and probably gonna be resuming dividends within a year. Obviously, we spoke about March and where the low revenue. If you look at situation from mid-March, trading slowed significantly prior to lockdown. We've spoken about that. All operations in Chile closed from 18 March, South African operations on 26 March, and then the group's operations through Argentina and Colombia at various states through the period. Just moving to slide seven. I think, you know, how did we react to COVID? You know, clearly when you first get announced that you're gonna be closed for 3 weeks, you think probably that's okay. Not great, but you'll deal with it. That 3 weeks turned into 5 weeks. 5 weeks turned very quickly into we're not opening anytime soon and had to go through quite an extensive lobbying process. As things unfolded, we had ensured that we had effective engagement with government, regulators, partners, customs and staff. This was a key component, was our communication strategy right up front. We obviously had the UIF TERS benefit, and you'll see that for the first month we had paid it to staff, just because of the rules. In essence, the way it worked, we had already announced to staff we'd pay them 40% during lockdown, and then the TERS benefit was announced to go to staff. We then changed that when the lockdown was extended, and in April and May, we kept the TERS benefit and it was passed on to South Africa. In Chile, there was quite a big contribution from the government to pay staff, and they paid quite a substantial portion of wages, and those that they didn't, we did reduce as well, substantially to between 50% and 60%. I think there was a huge focus on reducing costs and really mainly, I'm talking costs during the lockdown. We spoke to every single service provider. We fought with one or two, and I seriously believe we know who supported us and we know who didn't, and I think that's gonna have to be rewarded in the future and penalized. We are gonna work with those suppliers that helped us and those that wouldn't. I think we're all in this together. Everybody had to take some knock and largely, I think we got a lot of support from our suppliers without too many problems. We formulated plans to achieve operating efficiencies and improvements. Once we went through the costs, went through trying to manage working capital and available facilities, we really started looking forward and saying, "Well, how do we operate this business in a new normal?" This obviously accelerated as the lockdown extended, and we looked extremely hard at cost savings, which I'll touch on a bit later as well. Start operational plans. You know, we had to be ready when we could open. It wasn't certain when we'd open, so even when they moved to level three, we weren't gonna open. I think we were extremely fortunate to open in July. I do think that had a lot to do with our lobbying strategy and our protocols we put in place. We lobbied with the president. We had a two-hour meeting with the president as a casino industry, and we met with every other department that we possibly could and speak to tourism ministry and the rest. So we formulated plans to restructure certain operations, and it's particularly around the small units. We continued and we had started the Sun City restructure or plans to look at what can we do better before COVID started. So a lot of these plans were already underway and obviously accelerated as we went through COVID. And we all these plans to sort of restructure the business, get things right, culminated in Section 189, which I'll touch on a bit later as well. We gave notice to union and staff on the closure of the Levy and Carousel. Again, these two were due to be closed. I mean, we were about to start the consultation process. COVID obviously closed them, and it's taken obviously a bit of time. They've been closed the whole period, and we're in the 189. No staff, those units have been paid from July and August. And at the moment, are going through the voluntary retrenchment process. We followed a very similar approach in LATAM, and I think likewise successfully achieved, and costs kept quite well under control. If we look with the table there, we've highlighted this before. It's probably a little different to what we put in the results in the sort of the rights issue, but certainly as the actual we have known, this is where it's tracked. There have been some one or two funnies. We've got our employee temporary employee relief scheme refund from them, which reduced our employees in June. But you can see from a normal payroll of 190 million in March, came down to April 104, then the TERS been at 53, and then again operational in July up to 109 million. So very much, if you look at it, very much along in line in April. And why is that? Because we've lost a few staff. We only paying for hours worked. And, you know, initially we took a 60% knock in salary. And right now we're paying for hours worked. And other employees are on a reduction. If you're not laid off, if you're not an hourly employee, in other words, you're not scheduled, you're between 70 to 80% of normal salary, with some people laid off and some at 60, where we just don't need the resource at this point in time. As operations ramp up, that will obviously increase, but you can see the substantial reduction in costs. The same thing with the other costs, you know, pretty well under control. We took them down to about more than a third in April, and we kept bringing them down. And obviously now open, we have to incur costs to once we open. LATAM, very similar, a big reduction in salary in staff. And you'll see they slightly increased May, June, July because the government subsidy reduced and we paid a little bit more to staff. And look at the other costs. There was a big refund in LATAM expenses related to insurance claim, and that's why that's negative. Just moving to page 8, initiatives to ensure sustainable recovery. I think, obviously, the Protect and Leverage Banking. I won't speak a lot to the bank funding, refunding, because Norman is going to speak to it, but I think it was a very important component of the rights issue and the whole liquidity management and trying to get the business to be sustainable over the next year and manage very carefully. So the rights issue was very successfully, I think, raised, and with thanks to the support of shareholders, obviously a lot of you on the call, I think we had irrevocables, and our costs were kept down to an absolute minimum. I think below 19 million, we've seen other people raising very similar amounts, you know, costs in excess of 50. And I think that is to the support of our shareholders and VCP and Sane Capital. We actually underwrote the rights off or the portion that wasn't. We didn't have irrevocables. So we had the available facilities in place with including some of the bank facilities plus the rights issue. And the banks cannot take that away. So though the rights issue reduced our debt to make sure we don't pay interest, that facility is available to us, and they cannot take it away for the next year. We've proposed a settlement with Pacifico, and again, I'll come back to this deal later, so I won't talk to it now. And they're obviously driving efficiency optimization, so cost rationalization program extended. You know, having dug really deep, I mean, we looked at every single, literally, invoice level costs to understand what we're paying, where we're paying. And we've managed to probably eke up in excess of 250 million of cost savings. Some of them will still come. Some of them are, you know, as we switch out a system or do things, we certainly had a fantastic reduction there. I've spoken about the employees. And then the operating model restructure, I think during COVID, we have a very strict sort of ramp-up process in terms of hours worked, in terms of hours paid. We agreed with the union. So while we still have restrictions, we'll keep that operating model and keep costs and manage and staff salaries particularly under quite well under control. We're dealing with challenging units. We obviously spoke about Carousel Maledi. I think going into lockdown, we had ICU units, and you know, these included Sun City, Maslow, Stanton, Table Bay, and Wild Coast. And a lot of this is around the, you know, the hotel properties and where we knew we were going to have a battle. I mean, Table Bay is hard to believe how well it's performed the last few years, but its markets disappeared. It was 85% foreign, and so drastic actions being taken there. The 1898 process that we launched involves 2,300 positions in this African side. A lot of these, more than at least half, are at Sun City. I think with an element of overstaffing, which we were busy addressing. And then obviously with the drop in demand for leisure in Table Bay, business for Maslow, Wild Coast for a bit of leisure, and Boardwalk also a bit of leisure, but plus a bit more on the casino side. And then smaller amounts at all the casino properties, outsourcing food and beverage in the smaller units, resulted in 2-3. So is it a 2-3 total job loss to the economy? No. We will be outsourcing some restaurants at Sun City couple, and as well as the small units, food and beverage, and will be some people being employed by other providers. But we certainly will use 2,300. If we get some flexibility, we'll probably keep 300 to 350 of those staff in terms of being able to move them around, schedule them hours when we need them, and hopefully reduce the impact on labour. But it will still be a huge cost saving for us, which obviously we need right now. We accelerated online gaming. We have been fighting these live games and bet games. You've seen a lot of marketing on it. Theoretically, our view is quite firm in terms of national legislation shouldn't be allowed. At the moment, the provincial regulators are licensing these games, and we've decided we're going to join, and we drop in the legal objection because we're just not winning, and it's going to be a long court process from our lawyers. And we believe we have the right database, the right customers, the right trust, the right brand, and we should have quite a good opportunity in that market. Norman, do you want to just talk to the insurance claim? I mean, Norman's been driving this. We still have an insurance claim. Sure. Norman, over to you.
Okay, thanks, Anthony. In terms of our insurance claim, as part of our access all risk insurance policy, we do have an extension providing cover for business interruption following a contagious and infectious disease incident. So upfront, when the lockdown happened, we looked at our insurance policy, looked at our wording, and at inception, it wasn't quite clear what this virus was. Was it a derivative of a SARS virus? Was it its own new virus? And as more information became available, World Health Organization gave it a name, its own identity, and it's as a new virus. We again looked at our policy wording. We went into quite a lot of detail. To ensure that we did have a claim under our policy, we then took legal advice and also senior counsel advice as well to make sure that we could formulate our claim, which we did. We interpreted the policy wording in a certain manner, obviously with the guidance from our legal advisors, and we've actually submitted we did submit a claim to our insurers. Now, we've got 9 insurers in our portfolio of insurers, 3 South African, 6 in Europe, based in Europe, and we're going to have to deal with each one of them. Generally, there's one insurer that's the lead insurer that generally makes the evaluation and decisions around claims. But I think in this instance, given the nature of the claim and the size, I think each of our insurers are going to take their own legal view and opinion. So they are going to be we are dealing with the lead insurer currently. And, it's going to be an engagement. Our brokers, Marsh and in South Africa, Barring Marsh in the UK, have, indicated and what we've seen in the markets, there has been some cases around business interruption insurance around the pandemic. But largely, there hasn't been any cases that's been ruled on as yet. We've seen some insurance institutions offering relief, but that's exactly what it is. It's relief. It's not settling claims. I think there's been some incidents where if relief was offered, recipients of that relief had to waive their rights, etc. you know, in any event, we're not in that size of claim which to get any relief. So currently where we are, we have submitted our claim. We formulated it. It's been reviewed by our legal team. We have submitted it, and you know, we are a loss adjuster has been appointed to the matter. We're engaging with the loss adjuster. The loss adjuster is going to be engaging with the markets, and you know, we're going to be pushing quite hard for a for an engagement with our insurers on the matter. So in summary, that's where we are. Thanks, Anthony.
If we move to page 10, and we look at, I think this is probably the most important trading in South Africa since easing of lockdown restrictions. You know, we opened on 1 July, subject to strict operating protocols, so we have 50% of normal capacity in terms of number of guests permitted. We're probably operating just under 60% of machines because we have a bank of 5, we have 2 switched off. So we are able to operate slightly more number of machines, but from a people on complex, we've got to keep to 50% of the normal capacity. Regulations were amended a number of times. So, you know, from accommodation for leisure was allowed up to the curfew on 12th July. That was then stopped. Then from 12th July, the imposition of the 9 p.m. curfew, that was changed again on 31 July from 10 to 4. And then on 17 August, leisure accommodation allowed again. And obviously, this was the most important element here was the inter-provincial travel allowed. So people from Gauteng could travel to Sun City. As a result, Sun City will open on 2nd September. So initial impact of the curfew was almost an immediate drop-off in gaming revenue, which started then improving as the months went. And I think as people sort of changed their behaviors a bit. Most of our bars remain closed and restaurants and the casinos. Given limited demand, curfew hours, and it didn't obviously bode well in the limited demand. We had concessionaires open, so there was still food and beverage offering available to customers. Table Bay and Mazda will remain closed until there's sufficient demand. At this stage, we anticipate Table Bay opening in November, but certainly we're looking for obviously demand to pick up before we open those properties. We go to page 11. You'll see this is for properties that were trading. So casino income in 2019 for properties that were trading was 601 million. And this year we did 234, which is 39% of 2019 levels. LPN income did slightly better at 49%. And I think important to note, there was some time lag for them to open all the operations. It was a lot harder for them to activate all their sites. And in certain cases, bars had to remain closed because of not serving alcohol. And currently, we're at about 90% of our capacity in terms of the network. So we're still ramping up and obviously still with restricted hours. This has started to improve, and certainly it improved quite consistently other than when the curfew was imposed and then came up. And in August, we're at 56% of revenue, casino revenue, which, you know, we're pretty encouraged by. And certainly, you know, the improvement is continuing. I'll show you some graphs shortly. In alternate gaming space on the LPM, you can see up towards 74% of the prior year revenue, which is really a great performance considering they're not at full operating capacity. And then Sunbet really continued to do well at 108% at the 27 days in August. If we look at EBITDA, what happened? We've obviously got EBITDA for July. The trading units generates at about 48 million of revenue, and that's at 39% of casino revenue, 49% of LPM, and obviously Sunbet. So still at limited capacity. So to generate 48, I think on those sort of numbers as a group is pretty good. We had closed units, which cost us 41 million. Obviously, the drivers there being Sun City, giving us a net of 7 million EBITDA for the month of July. And clearly, August will be a lot better with the revenue continuing to improve. We put together some graphs here. You'll see this is a 7-day moving average. So you keep dropping one day, adding one, and we take it as a percentage of prior year. What we have noticed is there's been increased volatility during the recovery phase. Certainly, tables players quite big, and then also a little bit more of the pre-bet players coming back and going with time. So you can see, you know, we started at that sort of lower level, came off as the curfew came into operations and came into being, and then consistently started climbing. You've got the just to highlight the gold graph is slots revenue, and you'll see that tends to track the trend lines a lot closer. Whereas casino revenue is the blue line, and obviously the difference between tables. So tables tend to generate a lot more volatility, and you'll see property by property quite a big impact. And then the linear line For casino revenues, the dotted blue, and then the gold is just for slots. If you look at Grand West, I think started quite slow, to be honest, compared to some other properties, and then came off. So a bit of activity at first with the curfew came off quite hard, and then has consistently climbed to where it is now. And you'll see again quite a lot of volatility around tables, which pulls the revenue down. So where you've got the casino revenue below slots, it's generally obviously it's tables pulling it down. But quite nice, starting to get back up to levels that are functioning given restrictions. I think it's a good result. Sabaya, very volatile on tables. It's quite funny. Grand West tables is taking longer to recover, where slots is not too bad. And it seems like Sabaya is a bit of the opposite. So a lot more volatility in that graph. But you can see the casino revenue linear growth still pretty consistent and still growing, continuing to grow. Just going to the next slide. I'm on slide 15. Times Square has been incredibly volatile, but if you look at the left of the graph where it started above the 50% level, which is above the rest of the trading. It then came off quite hard of the curfew, and you can see the impact tables has had on it, and then grown pretty strongly. So you'll see upwards of the 70% on the trend lines on the sort of the slots revenue line, but with tables still being pretty volatile. So we've had some big wins and big losses, but obviously the important thing is to have the play. And over time, that tends to normalize. So again, a very positive trend line given where we started, and not bad at all. So it's a much better start than the other properties, and therefore the trend line might not be as steep, but it's continued to grow. Looking at Carnival, quite the opposite. Started quite slow, and then has improved quite dramatically, and a lot of volatility on tables play. So Carnival City is actually performing relatively well to last year. So if you drew a line, you know, we're sitting on the casino revenue above the 60% level and higher, so towards the end. So Carnival will be quite volatile, but certainly, you know, quite positive in terms of total revenue and growth-wise. Sun Slots, obviously a lot more consistent, the growth, given that you don't have the big gamblers and the tables play, but you can see a little bit coming off the curfew and then just starting to climb. And obviously the network, we also had additional network rollouts during the period, where we increased the number of active slots throughout the period, which is obviously very positive, but recovering pretty nicely, I think. Sunbet is a little volatile. Obviously, as sport came in, you'll see started quite slow and then going up. It also has been quite a lot more volatile. I think we're having our bigger players play a lot more, where we notice in the smaller players are not playing as much, and we put that down to the lack of sport at this point in time, and we think it will recover further. But obviously, the trend line is showing an increase. It's relatively flat, but it started above last year. So pretty positive. You know, we're encouraged by Sunbet and how it's performing. Just looking at Latin America, you know, trade under restrictions. We spoke about them being closed earlier. They're talking about the Chilean casinos opening when active cases are below 25 per 100,000 of population. It's not certain when this will be, but we anticipate probably an opening from October of different properties, and we're hoping that's where it will come in. Peru, Argentina remain closed, and Argentina and Peru, you'll see the infections are quite high. And in fact, Peru just went above us in terms of number of infections, and so those properties, again, probably won't open for a while. We commenced the voluntary retrenchment process in LATAM, in Chile, of about 1,000 people. We've had 451 accept, and we're still in the process, and we'll hopefully push for more acceptances. In Chile, instead of rescheduling debt, you kind of raise additional loans. There was a bit of support, government-backed loan available to us through the banks, which we took up, and we have the liquidity to manage through the COVID pandemic for quite a few more, for at least the next sort of 5 to 6 months. We're okay. Obviously, trade needs to start at some stage, but it is okay. Nigeria was locked down in April, and results we are looking. There is a bit of demand potentially opening, and really it's a matter of are you covering your costs or not is the key issue. So hopefully we'll resume trading there quite soon. And in Swaziland, it's very unclear. And I'll talk also Swaziland, we're potentially looking to sell. Just going to slide 21. Obviously, protect our balance sheet. Again, Norman will touch on the debt in the bank section, in the finance section, but we did quite a lot and we spoke about the rights issue, so I'll skip through those. Cost rationalization, you'll know we've been speaking about the central office restructure, which was completed in February. If resulted in a headcount reduction of 63 and a TCOE, that's a total cost of employment, of 50 million. That excludes bonuses and other costs that relate to it. So the cost saving will definitely be more than 50, could be upwards of 60 to 70 million. Then if you look at other cost savings during lockdown that we're looking at on the 219 costs incurred. So we really unpacked 219 costs in absolute detail, compared property by property, cost by cost. We've got in excess of 250 million in cost savings. These are in every single possible area, in service provider contracts, in marketing, in IT systems, and just general expenses. We went down to things like scent machines. Do we need them? Do we put them just in smoking? On Digitop, which is the alcohol and how it serves, where one was paying a lot more than the others, lift maintenance, escalator maintenance, why someone was paying higher than others. And we looked at everything that we could possibly do, and we picked up quite a substantial savings. On the employee side, we've got 2,300 employees across the group, as I spoke about the 189. Their annual TCO is 280 million. As I said, some of that will be replaced with an outsourced provider, but in where we're making losses on the food and beverage, so it will be positive from a group perspective, but you won't necessarily save the full payroll. But certainly payroll sold in excess of 250 million. At central office, I spoke about the headcount reduction as a result of the February 2020. We obviously have had to look deeper and also operate a lot more leaner. As a consequence, a further saving of at least 50 million was coming out of head office as well on reduced headcount and restructuring certain parts of that head office. So substantial savings if you consider the restructure that completed in 2020 and further headcount reductions since lockdown. We've restructured absolutely every part. I think collaboration, working together, is going exceptionally well. And really, you know, we have to replace some key vacancies, but factoring those in, there's still substantial savings. I spoke about the small unit operating model. This really results around what we call in the gaming light approach, where we have the right structures and not overstructured in terms of seniority or resource, have a much stronger GM, and then, you know, the underneath them. So thinner structures, but certainly the people to serve the customer and look after the customer experience, which is critical. We've restructured in count and cashiering. You know, the problem with count is that guys will finish the count in 3 to 4 hours, and then you can't really schedule them for any more. So that's been a big win in terms of restructuring that. There's no problem with segregation. Count is a very separate area, in essence, so it doesn't impact anything else. Then the guest service attendant and gaming technical assistants. On the gaming floor, we combined them, and then the MVG hosts, we moved into marketing. Again, it's about the customer experience on that, and will result in savings. And then we do a comprehensive review of our IT systems, which has resulted in some decent savings as well. If we just look at the next slide, 23, a lot of this, again, Carousel on the Lady, you spoke about, we're looking to dispose of the Carousel property and hope there is some value there. On Sun City, we're addressing high cost base and overstaffing, which existed prior to COVID. Wild Coast is really trying to improve the margin and obviously the cost base. Table Bay is needs a restructure with a limited anticipated demand. We understand it's 85% foreign business. Maslow Stanton, really much the same. I mean, corporate was weak prior to COVID. It's going to be weaker. We're making some big changes there. And then Boardwalk, obviously, implementing a restructure was approved just prior to COVID, and then a further planned restructure as well. I won't go over 189 again. We got a voluntary retrenchment early retirement process, which concludes on Wednesday. Take-up's been reasonable. It won't stop us from having to do a forced retrenchment, and that's going to conclude in early September, when we can hopefully implement at that point in time for the discussion with the union. If we look at, I spoke about sports betting. Obviously, the lack of global events has been a problem. And then online gaming, again, I spoke about live games, bet games, and we're well positioned to capitalize on online gaming. There's quite a big shift move by the regulators to allow for online gaming for lockdown. They lobbied all the provinces, the DTI. We've also lobbied as CARS as saying, you know, obviously if it's online casinos, it should go to land-based operators. But I would say there's still a bit of a process to go with regards to online gaming. So some of the strategic matters, I think obviously the biggest thing that we've done is the disposal of our 65% in Sundreams. It's structured as one deal. So although we're talking about the 15 because that's related to litigation and the way it was structured, it really is one deal. Now, importantly, if you look at what we're saying is at a 5.5 multiple on historical EBITDA, I think you've got to look at it slightly differently. And it's 5.5 and historic, 6.5 including the earnouts if they're achieved. And the earnouts relate to the SCJ license renewals. And then obviously the EBITDA they achieve in 2025. So unfortunately, quite long-term earnouts. But the reality from the other side is, well, you know, I pay the earnout now and then I don't get my license renewed. So it had to be somehow based on the license renewals to get the earnout. If we just, so the $116, go to page 27. If you look at the valuation, and there's a couple of factors that aren't taken into account in the valuation. Number one is the impact of COVID and the pandemic. In other words, you know, those debt numbers are 30 June. We're incurring 3.5 billion pesos a month in costs. At this stage, I believe there's going to be at least 6 months of that and then a ramp up as well, or maybe another 4 months of that. You've got to renew the SCJ license and cost thereof. I don't believe we won't renew the licenses. I think it's definitely the incumbent's favor and COVID has played no part, but there might be a small cost. And I don't think the cost is as significant as it might have been before, but there's still going to be a cost of renewal. There's need for further capital for Ikiki. We still, you know, we bid for Ikiki. We won the license. You know, trading hasn't improved since we won the license, and extract has probably got a little worse. And we have to spend about $45 million still on Ikiki. We've lost the Port of Boris license, and that's included in the 219 EBITDA. And that's over about $5 million. So if you adjust for that out, obviously your EBITDA will be lower, and that is lost. There's additional tax payable for Ikiki. When we bid, you had to bid an additional tax. And on the numbers we bid, it's probably another $2.5 million, somewhere around there, of additional tax payable every year, which will lower the EBITDA of Ikiki going forward, and again, 219. And then obviously the additional debt burden to lockdown, which has to be factored in. When we factor in most of these, excluding the ramp-up of COVID and excluding the cost of renewal, we get to closer to a 7.3 EBITDA multiple on historical, and with the earnouts, 8.3. And that's factored in all those adjustments. And when you look at it, you've got, you know, what is the cost of renewal? How long is the COVID pandemic? How long to recover? What sort of level of EBITDA will we do next year and the year after? And when we start trading? So there's a lot of uncertainties, not a difficult time to do a transaction. But I think on those metrics, I think it's absolutely the right thing for the group to do, given uncertainty both at home in South Africa and actually the world is large in terms of securing and getting out at what I believe is a good historical multiple adjusted for all these factors. The debt will be used, obviously, to settle the debt. We have a $15 million tax liability. We believe this is probably only 10, although 15 has been retained. We did disclose this in our accounts last year. It relates to do with complementaries given to casino customers, and hopefully that will be, we do expect to be settled imminently with the remaining proceeds being brought back to South Africa. Just going to page 28, Sunslots, we all know the 30% acquisition failed due to the Gauteng Gaming Board not approving in time, which obviously for us is positive. Nigeria, tourist company, with Nigeria disposal, the SEC is just taking forever. There were changes in personnel at its very senior level, and it's just ground to halt as a result of COVID. In Swaziland, we've had many buyers, but not many get approval. Umgonyama, which is the king, has agreed to, as exercise is preemptive. It's only just happened, so we're hoping to conclude this by the end of September, and we're finalizing that. The Grandrest exclusivity, the 20th gaming bill and the 21st have been announced, which is really allowing for a relocation of an outline casino to the new Helderberg zone. We have objected if the bill are enacted, there will be a Grandrest exclusivity zone will be reduced to from 75 kilometers to 25. And then the bill also introduced a new exclusivity fee and casino operator fees. And we've submitted comments on the bill. You know, what's the risk here? You know, I don't know what Togo will do. I can't ever speak for them. But certainly in the current environment, I think exclusivity will last quite a lot longer. The smoking ban has been nothing to speak of for quite a while. So nothing's come up and we haven't heard. But clearly the way they reacted to smoking in the lockdown, this is something probably on their list to do. I think the best time to take a smoking ban would be now because I think the impact wouldn't be as harsh. And certainly the recovery would be probably quicker given what's already happened to the business. Gaming taxes are always a continual thing. We've spoken about the Northwest one before. It's about 9 million costs. We're still objecting to CASA. And we've spoken about Peru gaming taxes, and we are objecting. The SCJ license renewal bids were due to be submitted on 18 Jan. This has subsequently been extended about 3 months, which is in the last day or two. However, they are trying to renew under the new law, We believe it should be renewed under the old law, which doesn't call for additional exclusivity tax. It does call for a bid, but your existing assets count for the majority of that bid, which obviously will save you money. So I think it's the right way to go. And it is the old process. So we are challenging Sun Dreams as well as the whole casino association. In the municipal license, we continue to challenge the ward of the Port of Iris and Pecan license. We've lost in the courts on this. However, they have not got building approval in either place. And this is the our basic objection. They applied four or five times as they didn't comply with the regulations in the areas they are looking to build. So it's crazy that their bids could have been approved, because that should be a given that you can deliver the project. But Enjoy is obviously in a lot of trouble. From a financial perspective, it's had a debt reorganization, and has actually been insolvent. So the debt holders are going to take up equity. So I'm trying to go through a big thing. Again, online, we've launched Lucky Numbers in July, and we'll introduce bet games and live games probably in September. And we've spoken about the Wild Coast license renewal. We, in agreement with our partners, we submitted to the gaming board, and we're just waiting. It has been extended to 30 September. Table Bay lease renewal has been delayed, again, due to COVID. So they were about to announce who would win the RFP, whether it was us or new operator. We've been extended now to February 25. And we are just still finalizing the lease terms. You know, we're making sure that there is some sort of out if normal travel's not back and everything else. But I think on the terms that we've got at the moment, I think a very good, it'll be a good renewal for us, a good renewal for the waterfront, and we can work closely with them. Boardwalk Mall project has been placed on hold, and we're reviewing the viability. You know, bank funding on these is demanding a higher return. And obviously we're checking all the, shops still keen on the project, and that will be on hold until we know we've got a viable project. Okay, I'll hand over quickly to Norman on the financial review. I don't think there's too much to cover here, because most of it's historic, but Norman, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony, and thanks again, everyone, for joining us for our results presentation. You know, as Anthony has gone into a fair amount of detail, you know, the pandemic has a significant impact on our group's results for the last 6 months. And, you know, with all of the group's operations in lockdown from late March 2020 to 30th June. And it is quite telling, and it's, you know, reflective in our results. If I go to slide 32, and again, I'll just talk to, I'll rather talk to some of our segmental results, but just to flag on this slide that, essentially, this slide represents our reporting of the consolidated South Africa, Nigeria, and Eswatini results. So the at the bottom, you'll see the loss from discontinued operation, which represents the loss from Sun Dreams, which is now accounted for a single line item. And essentially, if you look at it, due to the accounting rules in terms of IFRS 5, given that we, you know, we are required, given that we are disposing of our interest in Sun Dreams, you know, we're required to classify our full investment in Sun Dreams as a non-current asset held for sale. So what we see is our assets and liabilities of Sun Dreams is represented as a single line in our balance sheet and in our P&L, or you know. As well. So essentially what we see there is a consolidation of all of our results and Sun Dreams shown as a single line. To talk a bit to our numbers, if we can go to slide 34, what we've done, we've set out our segmental results looking at South Africa, LATAM, and Nigeria and Eswatini, and on a consolidated basis across all our operations. Obviously, you know, we've seen the impact. Our consolidated income across all of those properties declined by 56% from 8.5 billion in the prior period to 3.7 billion, and adjusted EBITDA reduced by 96% from 2.1 billion to 79 million. The impact of all of that on our headline earnings, it declined from 172 million from the prior period to a loss of 885 million, and which results in an adjusted headline loss of 702 cents per share. So, you know, that's the summary of our results. If we look at our South African results quickly, and I just want to flag one or two important factors in our South African results. Income from our South African operations declined by 55% from the prior period to 2.5 billion, with our adjusted EBITDA down by 95% to 80 million. Now, in our South African results, we did, if we look at our net interest expense for this 6 months, it was 535 million, but that included a hedge loss of 145 million. Now, given the fact that we have approximately 5 billion of our debt hedged when we did our refinancing last year, which represented about 50% of our debt, we hedged our position. You know, up until earlier this year, our hedges were at or in the money. But given the fact that the lending rates decreased decreased from December 2019 to June from 10% to the 7.25%, the prime lending rate, that resulted in our hedges becoming out of the money. As per the accounting rules, we evaluated our hedges. It was deemed ineffective, and that required us to take a P&L impact with the liability sitting on our balance sheet, and that liability would unwind over the period of the hedges. So it's not a cash flow impact, but it's an accounting impact of 145 million on our interest. In terms of the other big point that I'd like to flag is, you know, given the fact that in terms of IAS 36, looking at impairments of our assets, given that you know, COVID-19 impact was represented an impairment indicator, we did an impairment testing across all of our assets across the group, and you know what came out was you know, as a result of the extended lockdown, the anticipated slow recovery, we incurred impairment charges on of in total 1.179 billion, and that's broken out at Sun City. We took an impairment charge of 900 million, Boardwalk 180 million, and the Maslow Sanford 99 million. And that was the balance of the IFRS 16 asset that we had recognized. So, in total, impairments across those assets 1.2 billion. If we take into account the deferred tax component of that impairment, it's about 330 million, and the net effect on our earnings was 850 million. So that was the impairment charge that we took. The other big move on our South African P&L was the SOGO put option liability. As you know, and we've disclosed this for a number of years, that we have to recognize the put option liability. What happened given, and the valuation of that put option liability is based on the EBITDA valuation model. Given the impact of on the trading results of Grand West, that's against which the liability is, or SunWest, against which the liability is measured. Given the results, you know, we had to, the valuation had come down substantially, and that entailed us releasing a positive to the P&L, so reducing the liability on our balance sheet and the impact of that coming through our P&L at 590 million. Now, just to caution, as trading obviously ramps up at SunWest and Grand West, you know, it would require a higher balance sheet liability, and you know, we'll recognize that in future periods as trading improves at Grand West. LATAM, very quickly, income declined by 58% from 2.8 billion to 1.2 billion, and EBITDA decreased by 94%. I think Anthony spoke about Nigeria and Iswatini. You know, Nigeria probably coming back online in the near future, and Iswatini not sure about when that property will open. In slides 35 and 36, we've gone and given, as we usually do, you know, a fair amount of detail per property, but, you know, in summary, we can see that across our group and our portfolio, our decline both in South Africa was, of revenue was around 50 to 60%, declining per property, and EBITDA declining by 95%. And a similar situation on the next slide in slide 36 that we see in our LATAM operations. Moving on, if we look at slide 38, you know, we set out our capital, our CapEx essentially. You know, we've spent, if you look in the middle column to 30 June 2020, our total South African capital expenditure at 30 June 2020 was 191 million rand. A big portion of that was incurred up until the end of February prior to lockdown. And if we compare that with what we had incurred at a similar period last year, at a similar time last year, you know, we were at around 292 million. You know, just to add context, for the full year in 2019, our CapEx for SA was at 813 million. Now, as much as we've indicated, you know, in the left-hand column, a forecast for the end of this year at 374 million, you know, we will be evaluating the merits of CapEx on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, we have an in-depth review of any CapEx that's going to be spent, and we'll be fairly judicious about how we incur our CapEx for the remaining part of the year. In terms of LATAM, they did spend some initial CapEx in Kiki, and you know their ongoing CapEx, and they've also brought down their CapEx substantially. So you know that's the CapEx position, and as I said, we're going to be quite judicious about how we spend our CapEx. On slide 40, we've got you know, we talk about our borrowings and cash flows. Again, you know, as Anthony indicated, key to our discussions with our lenders was our ability to go to our shareholders to do a capital raise through a rights offer, and you know that formed part of a key was a key part of our discussions with our lenders. Obviously, we didn't want a situation where we raised a substantial amount of capital from our shareholders and only to be swept away by our lenders, and that was the discussion that we had. And, you know, our lenders, although we had quite tough discussions with our lenders, I think, you know, we came up with the right answer at the end of it. Our lenders, and quite a few of them are on this call, have been, you know, were extremely supportive. And as I said, our discussions were not always easy, but you know, we after robust discussions, I think we, for both ourselves, you know, we came up with the right conclusion. So what we've actually agreed to with our lenders is that, and this is our South African debt, all of our capital payments, and we've got quarterly capital payments, all have been deferred until the 30th of June 2021. If we look at our interest, the capital repayments was from March 2020 this year. So, you know, immediately when we saw that, you know, saw what was coming, we, in March itself, you know, we engaged with our lenders, and at that stage, you know, it was agreed to that we would defer our capital payments. But at that stage, given that it was still early days, our lenders understanding what the banking rules were, etc., we had to service our interest. But after that, all of our capital has been deferred until 30th of June 2021. In terms of interest, our interest service would commence in December, but with a caveat that on the basis that we have a certain level of liquidity that we've agreed to with the lenders, that would be the only time that we would service our interest for December. If we don't have that level of liquidity and things don't pan out the way we envisage with trading, etc., I think then the next we will have to service our March quarter interest. You know, given what our level of trading, the proceeds from the rights issue, available facilities, probably in all likelihood, we would end up servicing our interest in December. I'm sure that's going to make our lenders quite pleased. In terms of any interest that has been not been serviced, that interest will be capitalized to the respective loan facility. So interest on the amortizing facility will be capitalized to the amortizing facility, to the bullet, to the bullet, etc. And that interest will effectively be amortized over the remaining repayment profile. So whatever the remaining repayment profile of that facility was, is our interest will be amortized on that basis. To further, you know, ensure our liquidity position, we've agreed with our lenders to convert our basically our general banking facilities, our on-demand general banking facilities, to a committed facility up to the 30th of June 2021. So whereas it was a basically could be called, we've agreed that that would become a committed facility. In terms of covenants, obviously it's given our negative or no trading, you know, it's nonsensical to you know, measure covenants at the moment, and so all covenant measures have been waived until 30th of June 2021. What we have agreed with our lenders by the end of Q1 of next year, you know, Sun, we're going to have to put a plan together and have an engagement with the lenders, setting out how we see covenant measures, any changes in repayment profiles, and any of the other pertinent terms of our lending arrangements. So as part of our discussions and negotiations, obviously we didn't want to commit to anything right now because, you know, given you know, we'll have much more clarity on our liquidity position at that stage, our trading position, and we'll have that engagement with our lenders at that point in time. Obviously, as a management team, we will start the work sooner rather than later, and we'll track how that that goes. I suppose in terms of all of the discussions that we've had, first of all, there's, you know, we our pricing, our debt pricing was at different, our pricing was at different rates, at different debt to EBITDA levels. At the end of December last year, we were at a 2.8 debt to EBITDA, and there was a obviously a much more favorable pricing. If we look at where we are currently, we you know, above the 3.5 times where our pricing ratchets up. But you know, in all of that discussion, you know, our pricing, our cost of debt has increased. You know, I've put it at 1.2% there, but there's two components to that. One is the actual rate that that we have to that's increased on our facilities, but a component of that is our the ineffective that, or the hedge cost. So if you look at what our cost of debt at December 2019 was, and what it is now, effectively it's increased by 1.2%. In terms of our available facilities, as of 28th of August, you know, and this is taking into account the proceeds of our rights offer, we're sitting at 1.7 billion of available facilities. So, you know, and also given the fact, you know, that we are trading is, and we've seen the graphs and the trend lines, trading is improving, you know, and we want to get to a point where first of all, our properties can cover their costs, and then the nets would be to be able to cover the interest costs. So we are you know, sitting in a position where we have 1.7 billion of facilities available. Just on slide 41, we've set out, as usual, our detailed borrowings. As you see, South Africa was at 9.7 billion, but this was as of 30th June, so prior to the write-off, and this is before the IFRS 16 lease liability. So in South Africa, we were sitting at 9.7, and LATAM, we were sitting at 4.7 billion of debt. The next two slides, we've basically set out our cash flows, both in South Africa and LATAM. On slide 42, our South African cash flows. And again, we've seen the impacts of generating no revenues but having to service our working capital. The capex we've got there, the interest paid in the South African graph is basically relating to the first interest payment that we made in from a cash flow perspective in March for the March quarter. The dividends to minority shareholders, that was again in the first quarter prior to lockdown where we declared dividends, and that was received by our minority shareholders in our underlying assets. So that's kind of the theme is basically, you know, we serviced a lot of working capital during this last period. On that basis, I'll hand back to Anthony to conclude the presentation on slide 45.
Thank you, Norman. Okay, obviously, I think the important thing is looking ahead and what we're doing about it. So obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic will have a significant impact on our economies. There's no doubt on how big and how much that is. Will it drive inflation? What's going to happen? Is still obviously uncertain. We do not expect a quick recovery to previous levels. And I think one of the reasons why we've taken significant steps in costs. And I think other than the costs we've taken, we also have the flexibility of reducing hours where we have what we call permanent part-time employees. So there is further flexibility in maintaining costs down even when normal trading resumes. So I think we definitely have the ability with the restructure, with the cost savings, to really manage the business very well. Potential impact of regulatory changes, the smoking ban, gaming taxes, license relocations, obviously those are all uncertain. And then your SEJ license renewals are some of the big challenges. So if we look at the outlook, With the recent results of trading, I think further lifting of restrictions, we expect trade levels to continue to improve. So I think this will be a gradual improvement and gradually pick up. And we need to manage it accordingly and certainly keep costs down. And I think what's happened in July and August so far, we really are on top of it. I think we're doing the right things and managed to generate some EBITDA, and we'll continue to do so. With the various cost savings initiatives I touched on, implemented, and dedicated focus on improving the customer experience, what I didn't really speak on, we've done a lot of work to sort of improve the MVG program, our marketing. There's been some stuff going out that's not good, our social marketing. And a lot of that is in the process. Some of it's been really corrected. Some of it's in the process of addressed with the right resources, and some resources gone. So we have had the opportunity to look hard at our business and see how we can do things better. And certainly collaboration's improved, and that's all good for the future. CapEx obviously will be kept to absolutely essential and committed CapEx for the next year or foreseeable future. And alternate gaming expects to continue to bring good growth. So I think alternate gaming, we're going to pursue it a little harder. It's not that easy because of license and restrictions, the number we have, especially on the LPM side. But on the land-based, we got some good plans, and certainly integrating a lot more with land-based is one of the key strategies for the longer term. The proceeds for disposal of some dreams we spoke about will obviously strengthen the balance sheet and reduce interest charges. But that's really it, I think, from us, and I'll open it up for questions, which I guess the facilitator will let you talk to us.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this stage, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one now. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, please press star and then two. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. We'll pause a moment to see if we have any questions. The first question we have is from Tinashe Ho from Larium Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Just two questions from my side. The first would be, in simple terms, after all the cost to renew licenses, for example, Ikike, how much would you expect to be available to repatriate back to South Africa from the proceeds from the disposal of Sun Dreams? And second, it could seem as if you'd be keeping exposure in Sun Chile. And would it be correct then to assume that the $637 million in debt will remain on your balance sheet post this transaction?
Not sure if you answered the question, but let me try and answer what I think is the answer. Obviously, the spend of Ikike is for Sun Dreams. The renewal of the municipal license is different to the renewal of the SEJ license. Ikike required the bid, required a brand new building to be built, and a totally new build, and that was part of the bid. But that cost will be for the company Sun Dreams, which we're disposing of. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
On the debt side, we're selling for $160 million. We have $35 million odd dollars of debt in LATAM. That's at the holding company level. So not at the company level where we're selling. So the holding company level. And then we're keeping the $15 million provision. With the balance of the proceeds being remitted to South Africa. So you're talking just under $2 billion at this stage, given the rand dollar is, it's being brought back to South Africa.
Cool.
Does that answer your question?
Sense. Yeah. Thank you. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So there are no more questions on the conference call.
Is that it? I guess, look, it's not pretty reading our results, but I think certainly, you know, the business is well placed to recover. And a lot depends on the environment, the economy, and COVID, to be honest. But we certainly have the asset base, we have the management team in place, and we've taken the action necessary. So, you know, we're doing all we can, I can show shareholders, and we'll continue to do so. We'll keep costs down, and we'll keep managing the business as tight as possible, you know, for as long as possible, obviously, and get into the recovery. So I think we can manage, we can generate cash flow. The business is more resilient than what it was going to COVID, given the actions being taken. And we're very positive that, you know, the right things have been done for the business to recover. But thank you, everyone. I'm sure we got some one-on-ones, but we will catch up with you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.